All right. Welcome to another episode of the Success by Design podcast. Man, Alex, I think we're on like episode 167, 168. So, man, that is a lot of episodes. Before we get started, hey, we talk about all things career, success, business, and life on this podcast. But there's just, if you're in a job search in 2025, there are so many episodes of how to get on interviews, what your resume needs to look like, right? How to talk about money. That one has actually been viewed hundreds of thousands of times on salary negotiations. So definitely if you tune it in on Apple or Spotify or any place you can listen to a podcast, definitely check out lots of our episodes. I know they'll help you in your career. As always, if you need help in your career, go on over to execupgrades.com/podcast, schedule a free career consult with our team if you're in a search and you're looking for some additional help. Hey, today we're talking about untapping this hidden job market, right? This mysterious, magical thing that we don't know if it exists, but they're like, man, how do we tap into these opportunities that haven't been posted yet that companies are just thinking of? That's what we're talking about today. And I have a special guest with me. I have Megan Ramos. Me and Megan have been working together since, I think, 2011 or 2012. I hired her right out of college. So it's been, man, 13. Man, it's been so long. Me and Megan worked together right when I got out of the military. We did staffing for manufacturing where we were placing several hundred people a month in various roles. Then we went to work at the largest Fortune 500 recruiting organizations, right? Getting contracts, helping people get jobs, working with customers. Then she helped, you know, when we started our own headhunting and recruiting business that we exited out of. And now Executive Career Upgrades, it's been so long. It's crazy. Now I look, we've been working together for 3 years at Exec Upgrades. How long?
Five.
There you go, guys. 5 years at Executive Career Upgrades, right? So she knows a few things about interview prep, clarity, right? How to talk about money. So Megan, I can't believe we haven't even got you on the podcast till episode 167. She actually asked me a couple weeks ago. She was like, when am I going to be on the podcast? And I was like, you should have been on like 100 episodes ago. But Megan, I'm glad to have you.
Yeah, I'm so excited to be here. And like I said, Tim and I go way back and this is really exciting. So I'm excited to be here today.
Excellent. So I'll let you take the lead, Meg.
Yeah.
Where do you want to start today talking about this hidden job market?
Oh man, so many things to uncover. I'm really excited. But Tim, when I say the word iceberg, what comes to your mind? You cannot say Titanic.
Yeah, iceberg. What I think of is, you know, the first thing that comes to mind for me is you only see like the tip of the iceberg, right? Which maybe I would determine that as like what you see, what people see of you. So maybe success, but what they don't see, right, is the 80% below the water, right? Where you're kicking and screaming and you're doing all those things. So that's what comes to mind is, you know, people only see this, but there's just so much more to the whole bigger picture. So that's what comes to mind for me.
That's exactly right. So when I talk to our executive clients about this, and I always talk about the statistic that's floating out there is 80%, as you said, is what's underneath the surface. So again, that iceberg imagery is so powerful. 20% is above. So that 20% when you're an executive is really only of showing what's posted on the job search. So it's really tough not to get discouraged to say, man, I don't see a lot out there. Well, yeah, you're only looking at about that 20%. And there's so much below. Now, why does that happen at the executive level, right? There's such a differentiation. And that's because, I mean, think about it, right? It saves on recruitment. It could be replacing someone on a confidentiality level they don't want. You know, it could be just they have a more quality candidates, but they already have a trusted referral. I always say, I always pose this question to the executives I work with. And I say, hey, would you rather take a trusted referral from a colleague that you know and trust?
Or someone on a job application?
Right.
Let me think. That's what we always do. We're like, hey, we're hiring for this position. Who do you know? Right. Like before we kick it out to people. And what happens is there's so many people where there's so many instances that, you know, are happening right now. Companies are planning right now strategically, and they will every day, about expansion, but nothing's posted. The timelines are loose, right? They think they're going to fire someone, but they're not sure. So they haven't posted a requisition. Someone's set to retire in a couple months. Or the best part, someone gets a hold of you, right? An executive at the company and just says, here's the value I can provide to you. Right? Companies are always, you know, investing in themselves to scale and grow. So there's just so many reasons why there's so much opportunity out there that isn't even posted. Oh. Well, and then Inc. 5000 companies, Some of these companies are doubling, tripling, quadrupling, 10xing in headcount per year. They don't even know what they need. Trust me, they're hiring so fast, right? So there's just so many instances where that's why there's so many positions not even posted right now.
Right, exactly. And I think that, think about this, right? Let's break this down a little bit further. If only 20% of executive roles are posted, only 10% of those TEM are actually filled by job boards.
Yeah.
Right? Think about that. So we're only looking at 20%. And then out of that 20%, only 10% is actually filled through the job boards, which means 80 to 90%, it's really 90%, is filled all through networking. Mm-hmm. That's what it takes to get executive.
Yeah, think about this. If you're going to hire someone and pay them $300,000, right? And give them bonuses and stock and 6 weeks vacation and all this stuff. Man, I want to go through some trusted sources, right? Like I wouldn't want to post something and boost it on Indeed, right? I mean, there's nothing wrong with Indeed, right? But these are serious positions that require, you know what I mean? Like vetting, et cetera. So yeah, I know the challenge is there.
Exactly. And I think that that's something that's so interesting to think about, because I always say to our clients and other executives I work with and times I recruited and things like that, it's almost like you're playing the lottery, only it's a lot worse. Mm-hmm. It's even less winners, you know, and it's, you're just kind of gambling. They're like, oh, I hope they pick me and I'm going to get chosen. But your job search is going to take a little bit more effort. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to network. And so that's something I kind of wanted to get into. When you're tapping the hidden job market again, like basically 90% of these roles are done through networking. Mm-hmm. So I'm just, you know, I mean, I already know the answer and I know you do too, but just for the audience here, you know, people always have that question of, well, how do I even start, you know, when it comes to networking? Like, mm-hmm. is it about, people already think of the obvious, like who I know, but it's like, who else? Yeah.
No one believes me. That's what is the disadvantage to start. Because I know anyone who listens in, you're not at your first job. You've probably been in the workforce 15 to 40 years, right? You have moved your way up the chain. You know more people than you think you do. But countless times again, we have all these executives that join our program that have 30 years of experience and they say that no one can help me. Hey, Tim, tapped into my network, no one can help me. It's like, really, really? The chance of you being in business for 30 years and having continued success, because that's who we work with, right? They started here, they were a manager, they were direct, you know, they moved their way up. The fact that no one could possibly help you is literally impossible, right? What happens is they don't have a process to follow. Mm-hmm. They reach out to people. Megan, I haven't talked to you in 5 years. I DM you on LinkedIn. Hey, Meg, I'm in a job search. Do you know anyone? Right?
Yeah. Exactly. I think that there's always...
Oh, I didn't get a response. I guess not. That's a strategy? That's not effective. So the problem is most people don't know exactly what to do, right, to even... I know we're talking about hidden opportunities and there's many ways to do this, but your own network, these are people that want to help you, but people just don't have a process to follow. And that's why, you know, I think about Gary. I always bring up this story. He was a chief revenue, because he's a sales professional, chief revenue officer. He is the man that shakes hands and kisses babies. That's what he does, right? On a very big level. And he was like, Tim, no one can help me. We built a list of like 75 C-suite people. And in 60 days, he had 3 offers for 100K more than he did before. And it's not like a magical thing. I was like, listen, you know these people, but you need a strategy on how do we reconnect? How do we foster it? How do we ask? Yeah.
Yeah. And then I always am advising to think the bigger picture. So the easy goes, right, that you're kind of talking about is kind of like, who are my past superiors? Mm-hmm. Right? That's the easy, you know, bacon. But it's also thinking, well, what project teams did I work on? Who did I used to manage? They're now VP somewhere. It's also thinking...
Well, you know, it's not only that. Who did you manage? Because I could have managed you 10 years ago, right? And you could be at a higher level than me and I could be saying, hey, I need some help. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's something that I think a lot of times executives miss is, hey, who used to be on your team even like 10 years ago, 5 years ago now, that person's climbing the corporate ladder too.
Yeah.
Right. So this just like start with the people that you know. And each week on our weekly wins calls, this is the number one leader on the leaderboard every week is how are these executives landing interviews? It's all, well, not all from, but a significant chunk is from leveraging their current network. So if I would advise, if that's something you're looking to do and tap into that, again, 80% of the hidden job market, start with, hey, who do I already know?
Well, it's something like we track this every week. And I think, I don't remember what it is right now, but it's something, it's kind of funny. It's like 22% of people that join our career acceleration program get hired from someone that they already know. And it's so funny because every single person who schedules a call with this has already said what? I've already reached out to people and people can't help. Yet nearly a quarter of people we work with are hired from someone inside their network because they weren't managing it effectively. They didn't have a process to follow. And now they do.
Exactly. And then there's, you know, it's who do I know? And we actually, back in the day, Tim, we came up with this, that master tracker that we have mm-hmm. in our process. And it has those two tabs of, hey, who do I already know, which yep. we discovered. And then there's the who do I not know? But I tell executives, there's a key phrase here. Who do I want to know? Mm-hmm. Right. So with that, too, there's another way to network just with outside. So if you're thinking, you know, you're going down that rabbit hole of, hey, I've contacted a lot of people that I know. Who do I not know? Target companies are a big thing. You know, where can you find this? Think about it, right? We talked about this, Inc. 5000. You know, you could do the Ford's Global 2000 list. You can, Google search is always my best friend.
Ernst & Young has a fastest growing company list that they do every year as well.
There's a million different sources you can start to look at for just that piece. And then it's also thinking, you know, I'm going to ask you this question. What's your advice with how many companies should someone be targeting when they're making a target company list? Ballpark.
I would say there's a lot of things to go in here. Who am I? What do I do? What levels, et cetera. But let's say 20 to 100, depending on, you know, what I'm exactly targeting mm-hmm. generally.
Yep. And then when we're breaking that down, so once you identify those companies, let's say like I'm looking at Nike and mm-hmm. Google and Meta, what's your advice with essentially who should they be targeting if they're looking at that?
Yeah. Well, the first thing I want to do if I'm targeting those companies, which most people don't, it's pretty funny, right? Well, it's not funny. It's really sad because this can really help them, is when they're targeting Google, they don't take 1 minute to go over to LinkedIn and go to Google's page and it immediately tells you, do you know anyone that's working there? So that is number one, right? Like, who do I know that's working at these companies already? And we can utilize LinkedIn terms. I've been on 2 years ago, true story, a person was on the third round of interviews for a C-suite position. And I said, hey, do you by chance know anyone there? Because I was prepping him for an interview. He knew the CEO. He worked with them 10 years ago, right? Leverage relationships, right? So, hey, step one is, do I know anyone at those companies? And then step two is, who are second degree people that I know? Because LinkedIn tells you that as well. Hey, I don't know anyone who works at Google, but I know Megan, who knows three people who work at Google. So, you know, maybe I can get in that way. So those are the first two no-brainer things, you know, that I would be checking for.
And that's something I advise to, you know, executives all the time is you have to think the, what other rounds and routes can I take to get to this person I want to? So, you know, for example, if, and I've, some of our clients probably heard me say this a few times, if my dream company is Nike, I'm going in there thinking, I'm going to get someone there to talk to me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to start with, like you said, who do I already know that works at Nike? And then if I go and identify, let's see, three key decision makers, I usually think there's a power mm-hmm. of threes to start. And then I'm going to say, hey, do I have any mutual contacts? Because for example, if someone tries to contact me about you, right? If I have a good relationship with them, I'm probably going to make a little bit more effort to be like, yeah. Hey, Tim, talk to this person. Right. And so I think it's just thinking you have to think multiple routes because, you know, if I'm going to go to Nike, I probably may not get a hold of the CEO on the first call. It's going to be different kind of creative routes to take to get to that person.
It's happened to me before. I'm sorry. I'm busy, too. There's been times where someone on the team has referred me someone. They have actually followed up a couple times. But man, I'm just trying to manage my time as effectively as I can. And it's always on my thing of like, oh yeah, I need to get a hold of who that person Megan knew. And then it's like, after three times they've reached out and they've been unsuccessful, they reach back out to Megan and then Megan will ping me in Slack. Hey, you know, my friend's been trying to get a hold of me and I'm like, oh man, I'm so sorry. And then what do? I immediately action that. And I think that happens a million times each year.
Oh, it 100% does.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's something that you have to kind of think.
So busy, man.
That is true.
So busy.
I always say it's not personal, yet we make it so personal in our job market. And also I'm thinking, you know, someone will be like, well, I tried to contact them once. What do you mean just try to contact them once? You got to like follow up. Be a professional pest to the people you want to get in touch with. It happens all the time. Even Tim, right, is so busy, but there's so many executives that are, they're working on other priorities. You're not their priority in that moment, but you have to kind of keep popping up their radar. It's kind of in sales in some way. You know, it's not just a one call close to the CEO at Nike, yeah. But do you actually remember this crazy story with someone we worked with in the program? She was a super high level person in supply chain, and she contacted Jeff Bezos and actually got a hold of
him. Yes. I remember that. He disabled his LinkedIn. So you can't find Jeff Bezos on LinkedIn anymore. But it was like 3 years ago. But she was also like head, like huge, you know, not that that matters because he got thousands of DMs. But no kidding. He was like, hey, I'm putting you in connect with our global head of HR or whatever. And here she is. And here's how to tell her that I sent you or whatever. What?
Mm-hmm. And I always say sometimes it's just that stroke of luck too, where maybe you reach out to a CEO, like, I don't know. And then they're in the Starbucks line. They have to be looking at their LinkedIn and you're just that person they see. Mm-hmm. And so I just seems like you have to get persistent though. Keep following up. And that's where I think a lot of people just do that at first initial message to someone, but then they just kind of stop.
Mm-hmm. And we have statistical data from the system we use where we can see it. And we say that almost no one responds on the first message, which is so funny. Actually, we know because we have the data that says 78% of all responses from LinkedIn messages, right, are going to come after you follow up on the first message. So we have these people who come to us and say, I already got my resume done. I'm already reaching out to decision makers online, but no one's going to hold me. And I'm like, okay, you're sending one message. That's your problem. Statistically, right? No one's going to hit you back on the first message. Sorry. We just have the data that says the most responses come from when you follow up and say, hey, Megan, I know you've been busy. You know, does it make sense for us to have a conversation? And then that's where all the responses come from.
Mm-hmm. And then let's kind of go through this because we see this a lot of times is when someone is saying, you know, they're like, oh, I tried. And then someone reached out to them and they kind of do that default because they go, you know, I'm busy. That's the mindset. And they say something like, well, hey, Tim, you know, I'm happy to help you, but, you know, I'm happy to give you our TA's team or our name of our recruiter. Mm-hmm. What do you say to that when they try to like or apply online? What's your kind of common go-to to get to that networking call with that person?
Absolutely. So the situation is we're reaching out to a decision maker and he says, you know, kicks me back to the recruiter. Absolutely. I would say, hey, thank you so much for that. Before I go to the recruiter, I actually think that you're best prepared to answer just a few questions that I have, right? Do you by chance happen to have 10 minutes, right, for this? You have to. You have to say something, right? You have to get in front of people that can hire you, right? The recruiter, sorry, recruiters, they don't know the challenges of the department, right? I know they're there, they're vital, so is HR. We need to do whatever we can. Or if, when the recruiter decision maker says, hey, Tim, thanks for your interest, but hey, please just apply on the website and someone will be with you. My response, hey, before I am looking to be formally considered for the role, I actually just had a couple questions for you. You know, do you have time at this time or this time?
Exactly. It's that call to action that is super important. And I always say, even if you come across a recruiter, and you and I both started our, you know, careers really as recruiters in some ways, mm-hmm. and we placed thousands of people as recruiters, but there's tons more to that number that we didn't place. And sometimes as a recruiter, you're going to probably prioritize people that are more specific. They follow up than the ones that are like, oh, hey, I, you know, applied, and then you never really hear from them, but they don't stay on top of that.
It's like, how are you following up? Right. You say follow up creatively. Most people do. Have you heard anything? Have you heard anything? Mm-hmm. Have you heard anything? Have you heard anything? It's just, that's annoying. They might just block you. Hey, I noticed this position's still open. No one's more, you know, you need to be creative. That could be a whole podcast segment, right? But how can you be creative? How can you creatively follow up with these people so it's not like, have you heard anything? Mm-hmm. Right? Hey, this position's been posted 112 days. Hey, I could see that this is an urgent need. I looked at the requirements. Hey, I'm perfect for this role. When can we connect?
Right, exactly. With recruiters, they can be your friend, but a lot of times they're a gatekeeper. So you have to be kind of cautious. So I always do say, if you're happening to, you know, get defaulted to a recruiter, I would still maybe, you know, get a hold of them because they could be working on so many opportunities and they may know some ways in, but I would still absolutely number one, always to tap in that hidden job market, go to the decision maker directly who's in charge of hiring you because, right, they either have one, the authority to create a role for you. Mm-hmm. And we see this on our on the weekly wins is really that dream job comes from when someone basically makes their own job description.
Exactly.
Because they can do 95% of what they love to do versus 10% of what they love to do currently in their roles. And that's kind of a big, big thing to think about. Is, you know, to get that dream job. So you want to go to those decision makers because, again, they either have the authority to hire you into a role that you're looking for where you can create your own job description or, right, they have the authority to expand on a role they have posted. So I tell clients all the time, don't get so stuck on some of these job descriptions because they're a wish list. They're just throwing something on a page and, you know, they'll kind of figure it out. But if you go into that conversation, you align to their organizational goals. And you're able to really sell yourself as a candidate and as an executive, you are going to have a lot more buying power.
For sure. Well, that's how to win interviews, is figure out what people are looking for and tell them how you can succeed. I think the most people, so we've got a couple comments. Priya says, welcome, Meg. Kimmy Lechner says, good points. It can be overwhelming to network to find those unlisted positions. Absolutely. Heather said, great info. And this is true. The last three interviews she has gone through, right? The people are new and she's already worked with, and she says, continue to post on LinkedIn. So absolutely. Two things I want to bring up though. I think why most people don't like networking to find these hidden opportunities, or whether it's networking or reaching out to people cold who might have, you know, problems that we can solve, is people don't want to, you know, they don't want rejection. Mm-hmm. But what they fail to consider is rejection equals success. And the more rejection you have, the closer you are to success. But people don't like the way that feels for whatever reason. And no one likes to, a lot of people don't like to display confidence and talk about how great they are. And I don't mean from an arrogant way. I'm not going to come in and say like, we're the best, we're the, just the best at everything, right? But I will say this, right? I have to tell people how I can help them. So what I do, I was just talking to someone about this and maybe this will help you, is, you know, we aren't bragging here when we say this is logical facts. Are you ready? Logical facts. We place 8,000 people here. Logical facts. Last year was 532. Logical facts. We've been on the Inc. 5000 list for the past 2 years in a row. We'll be on it this year. We're the 48th fastest growing company. I'm not bragging. Those are just facts of us, right? We're writers for Forbes, Entrepreneur, whatever, right? So we have Yeah, you know, it's our responsibility here in this business to tell people that, because that is just credibility, right? So think of yourself, if you're going into a fantasy football draft, right? Stats matter, ladies and gentlemen. It's how you're paid. So imagine saying, you know what? I don't want to talk good about myself, but put me in the draft anyway. But don't show my passing percentage. Don't show my rushing yards. Don't show how many Super Bowls I've won, how many playoff attempts, but put that I want $20 million. Dude, no one is going to draft you ever. You are the biggest promoter of yourself, right? So it's not about promoting. If you've led 1,000 people, it's not positive or negative to talk about that. It's just, it is what it is. I've led 1,000 people. I've saved the last company $3 million. I reduced turnover by this. Like, you should be proud to talk about these things. And I don't know why people aren't.
Yeah, I think that there's that consensus of, you know, be humble, which is a true thing. You should be. But there's a point where you still have to stick out. So sometimes when I'm doing interview coaching and I hear someone talk about, hey, the last 20 years I've been an executive sales leader focused on revenue growth and territory expansion. My first thought is, well, every salesperson does that. What makes you different? Yeah. You have to, numbers make you stick out. It's the impact. Exactly.
It's your football stats, man.
Exactly.
It's the only reason, you know. The only reason Luca was going to get $350 million, right, was because of his stats, period, end of story.
Yeah, numbers do talk, as the saying goes. I was going to say, too, so we've talked about what in the world is a hidden job market. How do you tap into that? You know, where to look, how to start that. But let's talk about, let's say you do get a decision maker on a call and they agree to meet with you. Right. I would say, what do you think are the do's and don'ts, and where do you think people go wrong in networking calls where it ends up to be a dead end versus a productive call to get to the next step?
A list. The first one, I have people, sometimes I take networking calls as well, right? Because it's important. You always have to be expanding your network. And I'm on a networking call with someone who like says, hey, I want some advice. I want to do this. And you get on the call and they talk for 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, that's just weird, man. It's weird, right? So I guess the number one thing, I always go back to the CEO, if this ever happens to you, right? You walk into a CEO's office for like a final round interview, and they're like, well, Tim, what can you do for me? You know, I'm going to be like, to be honest, I'm not really sure yet, right? If you tell me where you're trying to go, what challenges you're having, I'll try to provide solutions that I found to be successful in the past sound good. So where do you feel you need the most help right now in regards to sales for the organization? You can't sell yourself. That is not the purpose of the interview, okay? The purpose of the interview is to be a consultant or the networking call, right? It's to figure out like, what might they be looking for, right? What are some of those pain points? Could I potentially solve them? So number one rule of a networking call, hey, you should be listening. You should be asking questions and listening and guiding the conversation, not just spewing to them like a bunch of information overload. That's probably the best one I got.
No, that's such a good thing. I completely 100% agree. And that's where when I'm doing trainings or mock calls and I hear that, you know, a lot of times where someone just kind of goes straight into just word vomit, word vomit, word vomit. And they kind of, you kind of lose somebody. You have such a small window to make a first impression. You only get one. And if you are not listening and you're making assumptions, and at times, this is where I think executives struggle a little bit, is all of you are problem solvers, right? So you're used to be the one that goes to for help, the ones that, you know, problem solve. So we kind of go into solution mode too fast. Versus kind of, hold on a second. So I always say in real life, I think you talked about this too. I think I get this from you. Tim has seriously ninja'd my brain over the last 13 years. But when someone comes up to you and they're like, let's say I'm on your team, right? So if I come up to you and say, Tim, I have a problem. What's your first response?
What is the problem?
Right. So
what is the clearly defined problem? Because most of the time people think that my problem is this, but it's actually not, right? The problem, I tell with this clients all the time, the problem is never turnover. Does that make sense? The problem is your recruiting strategy, your ineffective onboarding. It's always something else. So the biggest thing is the root cause.
Mm-hmm. And that's where I think that it's, you have to pull the thread through the needle a little bit. You have to really, on these networking calls, even if you don't know, like let's say, again, Nike is hiring, right? And they have an open position. You kind of have to approach it as, you know, but there could be a member. Most executive roles are not posted. So there could be a high probability that there actually is a role, because why else would someone else agree to talk to you?
I always say that too. When we do, you know, our outreach for the people we work with, our messages say that they're looking for their next opportunity. Why would you, okay, say you're at a job right now. Say you're a high level VP, right? Or you're in the C-suite, or you're a director for a large company. You are busy, man. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't care who you are. You busy. You are not going to, why would you take a call with someone that you can't help, that you don't even know? It's ridiculous, right? You wouldn't. There's probably something there. But how are you going to handle that conversation as the person who's trying to network with that person, right? Because I tell you what, just because I do a networking call with someone, right, there could be a lot of opportunity. But if that person doesn't display themselves well, they talk the whole damn time and all this stuff. We are not, you know, I'm not going to connect you with people that I know. You're not going to work for here. I'm going to say, you know, sorry, Meg, I can't help you, right? We're not hiring. I don't know anyone who can help you. And I think most of the time there is opportunity there, but people are presenting themselves in the, you know, not the best light. They're showing up to a Zoom call, just rolling out of bed. It's all dark like a dungeon. The blinds are closed. They're wearing a white ratty t-shirt, right? So whole podcast, right? Brighten up, man. Put on a nice shirt.
Dress to impress, as you always say. And then there's just, I think at the beginning of the call, people feel kind of awkward. It's always easier to talk to someone you know, right? Someone you have rapport with, someone that you at least kind of have some kind of background with. When you're talking to a complete and total stranger, it's still like, you know, find information first. That will just make the call go better. So if you can find that common ground for these networking calls you go on, if you can set your intention too, so it's not like, hey, Tim, we're going to talk about golf for 20 minutes, because someone's going to get really confused on that. It's kind of like, get to the point of what do you want to talk about, and then start asking them questions, and then sit back and listen. There's a statistic that we talk about a lot on even interviews or networking calls, is that they should always be the more of the talking, like 70-30. Mm-hmm. So it should be kind of ask a question, sit back, get that information before you go into, again, solution mode. That's where executives kind of misstep a little bit. They go into like, hey, here's how I do this versus hold on, step back. Same thing when I went back to that root example, cause. Root cause, where if I come to you, hey, Tim, we have a problem. It's not going to be like, well, here's how I solve problems. That's such a weird thing to do. So why do we do it in these conversations?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
The analogy I like to give people is imagine a kid that's your niece or nephew that's hurt and they run up to you. The first thing, like, if you just like picked them up and said, don't worry, everything's going to be okay. Because that's what you're doing when someone like has a problem and you're like, just do this. It's like picking them up. Hey, everything's going to be okay. That is not how humans interact. What's the first thing we do? We're like, whoa, what happened? Where does it hurt? So when Megan's talking about the 70-30, another way to think about it is think about just a consultant, a doctor. Ready? What does a doctor do? Where does it hurt? Right? How long's it been hurting?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think happened to it? What about the, you know, you ask you a million questions and we're sitting there the whole time like, just give me the treatment. But if your knee hurt, okay, if your knee hurt and you went to the doctor, you're like, you know, my knee hurts. If he says, hey, cool, we're just going to inject cortisol right into your knee. You'd be like, whoa, 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 you haven't asked me enough questions, right? So just think of like that doctor framework of like, hey, before we provide solutions to people and tell them how we can help, make sure we really understand where they at, why are they there? At that stage, right? Where are they trying to go? What have they already tried, right? Like we need to have correct information to provide solutions. But most people just go right to the solution. It's
exactly.
Weird.
They do. And that's why it's such a thing is I always say networking and interviewing is such a weird skill to have. And going back to a personal moment, I actually talk about this a lot. I don't know if you remember this, but you drive, well, not drive to me is not the right word, but well, kind of, because I was always, I'm actually an introvert at heart. So the idea of networking a decade ago was terrifying to me. But we have Tim Madden here who's probably the most charismatic person I've ever met in my life. But so he goes into this networking event in Tampa, right? There's a bunch of people there. And we're thinking, this is like Blue Martini right off the International Mall. And Tim just goes in and works the room, smiling everyone, talking. And I'm like, where is the nearest wall plant? I'm going to go find and stay in here. And you call to me at one point, like, what are you doing, man? Go talk to people. I'm like, well, what do I say? You're like, just have a conversation. Be yourself. Just be curious.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you're like, go talk to 10 people. I'll talk to you later. And I just, then Tim's going to work the room. And I just saw that too. If you kind of find you can be authentic to yourself and still be whatever personality type you are, if you're naturally curious, you have to find that versus even in networking calls, if you approach it, it's not just like, hey, I need a job. I need to do this for me. It's thinking the bigger picture of, hey, what can I do to help this person? Hey, if I talk to Tim Madden over at Executor Upgrades, what am I actually curious about and want to know? And it's not just about, hey, I need a job. Because when we think that, we suddenly just get really weird ideas and do things differently.
Well, it's anything in life, okay? If this is new to you, it's going to be scary and uncomfortable. If you've never shot guns before and we're going to shoot guns today, you're probably going to be just a little nervous, right? If you've never went skydiving and today we going, you're probably going to be nervous. If you've never been on a roller coaster and you go down, you're probably going to be nervous. If you haven't walked up to complete strangers during networking events and sparked a conversation, you're going to be nervous. But here's the key thing to know. How do we finally try to ease that uncomfortability? Repetition, baby. Right? Building the muscle, right? I've shot so many weapons being in the military for 22 years and retiring, right? It is not a big deal if I were to go shoot weapons today, be totally fine. Jumping out of a plane, going down a roller coaster, these conversations, because I've done it so much, right? So that's the only thing, right? So you have to know that to gain skills that are not yet comfortable, they're going to be uncomfortable. But I do know over a period of time, I don't know what that's going to be from you, right? You're going to feel better about it. It just comes with, you know, experience and training. But it's natural to feel uneasy. But that's the only way you can grow. I wish life was easy. I wish it was so easy and we didn't, you know, but it's not, you know.
No, that's why I was kind of going into the beginning of where if you apply to roles, it's that it's playing the lottery. But in the job search, as I said, you're going to have to take a lot more effort. And that it comes from networking. Like you said, repetition is so powerful here because the more you naturally do it, the better you get at things like your pitch, what your asks are, the questions and how you build value. So I would say there's kind of three main things if you're in the hidden job market and tapping to that you should do. Even on whether it's networking call or interview, you have to do these three things on every call. One, build rapport. You know, if you don't like the person you want to hire, not going to hire them.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to really spend a couple just quick minutes on building that relationship with going straight into professional mode. Step two, get information. Then three, show value. Because think about it, right? If they are doing all of the talking, you're just doing what?
You're doing the listening so that you know how to respond. You're getting the information that you actually need. That's a good thing.
Yeah. But we also have to show value, because if we just hear everything about that company and their trade sequence, but we didn't show value, we're probably not going to move forward. Mm-hmm. If we're just responding to them in a Q&A type of session, which is never good, control these conversations, we're just going into, I'm just going to show some value. But how do you even know what value you're selling if we don't have that information first?
Number one mistake everyone makes on an interview. They don't figure out what they're really looking for and what some of the challenges are. And they just answer questions or they sell themselves about how great they are. And they're just completely overlooked. But once you can get better at communicating, right, and you follow a process, right, you know the questions to ask, and it becomes, you know, and then all that fear and anxiety leaves too. And then you're not like, oh, I hope I did a good job. I hope I sold myself. It's like, interviews shouldn't be like this, right? And networking calls, it shouldn't be like that. It shouldn't be so tense. It shouldn't be so, you know, like, man, I hope it went well. There's a process to follow.
Right. And then let's just say at the end of a networking call, right, someone gets to the conversation and they're like, yeah, hey, Tim, I'll refer you to Christina, right? Mm-hmm. And, but then how do you make sure you close the loop there? What's your advice when people are doing these networking calls?
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, thank you for the introduction to Christina. When do you think you'll be sending that introduction?
Let's say I'm going to probably in the next week or two.
Got it. Hey, I'm going to ask more questions now. Hey, while I've got you here, you know I'm in a search. Who are other individuals that you think it might make sense to connect with as I'm in a search?
Yeah, there's a couple of people I have top of mind, but I can definitely circle back on that.
Perfect. Yeah. Who was one of the first people that came to your mind? You said a couple people.
Yep. Casey Madden.
Boom. Okay. Now we got one. See, power of asking a second question most of the time. Who's another? Who's another? Okay, got it. You said you'll do these introductions for me. Hey, I know you work at IBM. Where do you think I would best fit in IBM?
Well, based on your background, I would say I could really use you for operations.
Great. Who leads, you know, operations inside that department?
Jane Doe.
Okay, perfect. So now we've got a couple things, but the most important thing is locking down that next step. Got it. So you're going to send, hey, I really appreciate it. I've obviously already said how I can help Megan. How can I help you? Right. We've already went through that. But the important thing is to set up a follow-up, right? Hey, Megan, it would mean the world to me. Do you think, I know it only takes a couple minutes to kick out some emails or LinkedIn messages and CC me. Do you think that, you know, potentially by Friday you could kick those out for me? It'd mean a lot to me.
Yeah, I can probably do that.
Perfect, too. Excellent. Well, hey, I know I can do this. Let's set up, you know, I know you're busy and I'm busy. I'd like to set up a quick follow-up call because I know you said there's potentially some more people you would be able to connect me with. Not take a lot of your time. Maybe I just set it up for 10 minutes on Monday or Tuesday. Which would work best for you?
Bingo.
There you go. So set something up. Because here's the thing. When there's a reconnect point, they're going to be more apt to do those introductions. Because remember, these are busy people. I'm sorry, right? I do it too. I say I'm going to give friends an intro and then I forget and then they follow up. But if I have that reconnect point, I'm going to get that done before the event.
Right. You always say the powerful things of time kills all deals. And sometimes when I hear networking mock calls or interview calls with executives, I see them miss that. Where it's like, oh yeah, well, we can follow up in 2 weeks. And then they just push it down the road.
Yeah.
So the person's going to totally forget who you are.
Exactly. And the conversation that you had.
Right.
So a couple things from LinkedIn. Do companies also have strategies to find quality people to fill their roles? As a grant to small business owner, finding quality workers' desire for longevity is challenging. Yeah. So our best, you know, we'll talk about hiring processes for a second, is, well, we'll go ahead and tell you. We, you know, promote on our social medias, right? But on Indeed and ZipRecruiter and when we run and LinkedIn, here's what we do. Here's just our strategy. We have the job description, obviously. So we ask for referrals. We promote on social media, but let's talk about it. I know we're talking about job boards, right? At the bottom of the job description, we're going to say, if you're interested in this position, please do not apply. Please email us at tim@execupgrades.com. So already we're like, hey, can people follow a general direction? Did they even read the job description? So then they have to email us. Then we do what we call a one-way interview, right? Because we're busy, right? So this helps us hire 77% faster. So we use a system called HireFlex, not affiliated with them. I love them, right? Because then we send a video saying, hey, these are the questions. Please answer these questions. And then we vet the video. Kimmy. So we're like, hey, did this person, are they somewhat professional? Are they not driving in their car with the McDonald's cup in their hand? I mean, you'd be surprised some of the submissions we get, right? Because here's the thing. You need to know that people can follow basic instructions and be basically presentable before we even want to talk to them. So that's how we alleviate a lot of it. And then past that, basically what I'm getting at is you need to have a structured interview process. And most people don't. Most people don't. And if you don't have a process, you can't replicate things. And then once you have a process, once you notice deficiencies in that process, then you can alter them. But that's what we do. Chris said, hey, after we've sent multiple messages, should we follow up? Yeah, absolutely. A good way to follow up is just, you know, email that contact. Maybe they're not active on LinkedIn. But I would say only do that for positions where, like, you know, we really want to work at Nike. We know this is the person. We've been messaged them a couple times. We can't get a hold of them. Hey, what's their email? And send a creative follow-up email. Paul says, great content. Appreciate it. And then LinkedIn's user, if that comes in an email, is there a need to tweak the approach? Sorry, I don't remember what the question was on that. What else we got, Megan?
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, thinking about everything we kind of talked about with networking, and we kind of jumped to the very end there and everything, but let's kind of talk to, I want to circle back on a do in reverse order now, just real quick.
Yeah,
when you're in the networking aspect, people always ask me this question a lot, and that's, how do you open these conversations?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one way I would do it. Hey, Megan, it's great to connect today. Appreciate your time. Hey, as we get started, I see you've been at Facebook for 5 years as a VP. You've been promoted a couple times, so congratulations. Hey, first, I just really want to ask, what do you think's contributed to your success of being promoted a couple times here?
Exactly. And then they're going to answer you.
That's one thing.
The information.
Yeah, maybe something in the market, right? Hey, I just know, I see your Facebook in Texas. I saw they just built that huge data center. Are you there? Are you in Texas? So I learned something, right? I see where they went to college. I looked them up on social media, something, right?
That common ground.
Well, something to show like, hey, I basically did minimal research at least of, like, you know what I mean? And, you know, whole podcast episodes. I'm smiling, right? I'm genuinely interested. You know? And some of these networking calls I've been on before are awkward, right? So
they are,
you know, be personable, right? Find some common ground, do your research.
That's part of, I think, the executive presence too, kind of going to that point, is there is kind of that, some of that awkwardness. You don't know how someone's going to be. You're on that Zoom call. We're not sure their personality. That's why it's kind of your job in a way to make them as more relaxed. If you kind of watched him in any dynamic, he's so good at body language and smiling. And even John Maxwell talks about this. Executive leaders are so approachable because they're like mindful of their body language, of how they're coming across. And even in these conversations, you know, again, that intro is so important too, but so is the whole execution throughout the networking call.
Yeah. This can get intense and overwhelming. I'm with you, right? If you don't know how to network, if you don't know how to get a hold of decision makers that don't know you and these things, right? It makes it very challenging to land these upward mobility roles. And everyone we're working with, I tell them, listen, if you haven't done a good job fostering your network, if you don't know these tactics and strategies, as you move up the corporate ladder, if those are your aspirations, you have to learn these right now. Because I tell people, you know, they get hired working with us and I'm like, hey, that's great. But I need to, you know, here's a couple things. Your next position is going to be more difficult, period, right? As you move up, positions are just more difficult. It's more political. It's more based on who you know, right? Think about this. Is the president going to appoint like a cabinet member who, you know, no, it's impossible, right? They aren't finding someone off Indeed to say, you're going to be the Secretary of Treasury, right? What happens? They have numerous, referrals, people know them, etc. So, hey, we say the number one biggest problem in your career is not enough people know you, number one. And if you're in a search, not enough people know you're probably even in a search that actually have worked with you throughout the years and actually could be apt to help you.
That's completely, couldn't have said it better, is that we forget so much of that. And how do you get noticed? Because again, you want to become that referral. that word of mouth, someone that goes to. And that's why I even tell clients, when you're trying, you're in the networking process in your job search or you're interviewing, you also have to be posting on LinkedIn to have that presence and stick out. Because it comes down to you and another candidate. I don't know about you, but I'm a recruiter back in the day. I'm going to go to that person's profile and see what on earth are they posting out there in the market. I'm going to look at my other candidate too, because that can be a tiebreaker.
Well, the other thing is, what people don't realize is successful people that are way more successful than you, guaranteed, that are way busier than you, guaranteed, right? What? They are posting online. They're posting about the challenges they have. They are posting about, Alex, where's your remote? They're posting about, you know, everything. The challenges they're having, et cetera. Gary Vaynerchuk's a prime example. So if you think you're going to have a high level of success where no one knows you, how many championship, it's not feasible. Do you think you're going to get drafted to a top NBA team when no one knows you? You just fly under the radar? Look, you can't fly under the radar to have success in your career. I wish you could. So you have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. You have to get comfortable with rejection and know it's a part of the process and know it leads closer to success. You need to be uncomfortable about, hey, I don't know how to network. That's okay, right? I don't know how to find these jobs. You know, I don't know how to do these things. That's okay. John Maxwell, one of the most powerful things, man, I was so blessed 2 months ago. I got to literally spend time with him and ask him a couple questions. And he said during that session, Leaders develop daily, not in a day. And you're not going to learn all this in one day. But people really underestimate 10 to 20 minutes a day, how much that can truly transform their life. You might not be good at networking right now, but I assure you, if you commit to it, re-engaging, right, getting some tips before each one, following up, self-reflecting, you will get better. And at 30 days, you'll drastically be tremendously better. Now, we have people that hate networking, get so much anxiety. But when they leave us, they're like, feeling pretty good. I'm going to keep networking. I'm going to keep doing this. And I'm like, that just makes me so happy.
Yeah. I used to be one of those people. Like I said, during that event, you had me go with you. And then now it's crazy that I actually teach people how to network.
It's not only that. Well, I have to tell them, because you've came a long way too. We were securing a contract during when we had a headhunting and staffing agency, right? This was an initial appointment. I said, hey, Meg, go ahead and come with me. She was having like the biggest anxiety attack ever. This is over a decade ago, right? I'm like, you're not even the salesperson, right? Like, don't worry. You're just coming along and like taking notes. And she was like, oh my God, oh my God. You were like hyperventilating. I'm like, it's okay. Fanning her down, giving her some water. But hey, Megan had to go through that. And likely that's how you're going to feel as well, right? That's how you're going to feel when it's game time, right? And you're maybe put on the spot. But how do we unease that? You lean into it, you know? You keep doing it. And then at some point, it'll become a little easier.
Yeah, the student becomes the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, I think something so important is, like you said earlier, repetition. If you're uncomfortable networking calls, I recommend practice. You know, hopefully you can hire a great executive advisor to help you. But if you don't, you know, also, hey, who can I practice with a friend that I can go through having kind of a conversation with? Because once you kind of pull off that initial thing, and anxiety is a lot of based on fear or feeling almost unprepared. So the more you are prepared and comfortable, can kind of just kind of calm down your body to say, I'm just going to have a conversation today. I'm going to make a new friend today versus, oh my God, I have to get a job. My mortgage payment is coming. All these things we start to put in our heads can really derail the conversations or have.
They can't help me anyway. Right. I don't even know why I'm going to this call.
Right.
Man, this is spiraling out of control so quickly.
Mm-hmm. Versus, hey, I just want to have a conversation and get to know this person. This is really cool. I also want to hold a Nike. I'm actually really excited.
Yeah. So we tell everyone, hey, you get what you put your attention on. We have two options today. Focus on the positive things or focus on the negative. I tried the negative thing early on in my life. It just did not work for me. It just didn't. And I know it's not going to work for you either. Right? So, you know, it's about the opportunity each day. Some people, it's just a recruiter call. Or, you know, I'm just talking to this hiring manager. I think the position's less. It's like they devalue all these things, right? So I would just urge you to say, do you even see the opportunity that's around you right now? because I've seen so many people from a recruiter call, or this people can't help me, or they're not going to be able to make my pay or whatever. I've seen it on the other end and be like, you're not going to believe this. The recruiter is the CEO's son, or, you know, something like that. And he loves me. Or, hey, they thought they needed a position for 150, but I told them this, this, this. And now they just offered me 275. Or just 2 weeks ago, I can't talk about these things enough, of Eric, right? A recruiter reached out for some like low-level opportunity. Now he's the COO of the company.
Right.
There is opportunity all around you right now. Are you wishing to see it? Are you wishing to say, it's just a helpless situation? You really get to decide that.
I agree. 1,000%.
All right. So, hey, to stay connected, right? Thank you for another episode of the Success by Design. Megan, thank you for coming. We're going to have you back again real soon. And as always, if you need help in your career, go on over to execupgrades.com/podcast. Until next week, have a great day, everyone.
Bye.